Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. It was just after midnight on April 21st, 2007, when 22-year-old Paul Carter vanished somewhere in the dark waters between Portsmouth, England and St. Malo, France. He had boarded the overnight ferry, the Britannia, run by Brittany Ferries, with a group of workmates bound for a weekend working across the channel. But somewhere between the bustling English port and the historic French coastline, Paul slipped off the map entirely. No one saw him leave the ferry. No one heard a splash. No alarms were raised. By morning, Paul was gone. The ship docked in France at 7:15 a.m. The crew went about their routines. Passengers disembarked, but there was no sign of Paul. Official reports hinted at an accident. Whispers suggested he may have gone overboard, but the waters that night were calm. Some believe Paul may have simply walked off into the fog of St. Malo, choosing to disappear. Others are convinced something far more sinister happened during those quiet overnight hours at sea. Paul's family has spent nearly two decades searching for answers, chasing fragments of sightings, battling authorities across borders, and clinging to hope. But to this day, no one can say for certain what happened on that ferry. Let's unravel the chilling details of one of the English Channel's most haunting mysteries, the disappearance of Paul Carter. Paul's story begins, like so many adventures, with a familiar route, a crossing thousands make every year between England and France. The ferry from Portsmouth to St. Malo isn't just a means of travel. It's a passage through history, weather, and some of the most unpredictable waters in Europe. It's a stretch of sea steeped in stories, connecting the southern coast of England to the walled city of St. Malo, France. And for Paul, that crossing should have been routine, a simple overnight ride with friends. But the waters of the English Channel have long carried more than just passengers. They carry mysteries. Before we dive into what happened the night Paul disappeared, let's take a moment to understand the journey, the route, the environment, and why, despite its familiarity, crossing the channel isn't always as straightforward as it seems. Under its placid surface, the English Channel, or La Manche, is a crossroads of history, mystery, and raw human ambition. Spanning just over 20 miles at its narrowest point, this stretch of sea between Portsmouth and St. Malo has been used for millennia, from ancient migrations and Roman invasions to modern ferry crossings. Over centuries, empires, armies, and pilgrims crossed its tides. Julius Caesar made his infamous forays. The Normans sailed in 1066. It witnessed Dunkirk evacuations, hovercraft first voyages, and balloon crossings, like Jean-Pierre Blanchard's flight in 1785. This body of water tests every form of passage. Nathan Webb was the first confirmed human to swim the channel in 1875. Louis Blériot flew across in 1909. It's a stage for courage and, occasionally, tragedy. In 1924, a KLM Fokker aircraft vanished between Croydon and Amsterdam, last seen over the channel and never to be found. More recently, Ian Hughes, a firefighter, disappeared in 2023 during a charity swim attempt. Despite a massive search involving helicopters, boats, and Navy vessels, no trace of him was ever found. And the channel can be deadly, not just for adventurers, but for desperate migrants. In late 2021 and beyond, dozens of tragedies occurred as overcrowded dinghies capsized, with bodies washing ashore amid the crisis unfolding in the waves. From ancient migrations and military campaigns to leisure holidays and daring challenges, millions of people have crossed the channel. Commodores and traders travel for work or holiday. Families take the Portsmouth to San Malo route for weekend breaks, cheese, cider, and sea air. Adventurers swim, sail, or even hovercraft across, seeking feats of endurance and connection. For Paul Carter, this route was familiar terrain. It was a work trip. What could have gone wrong? Well, beneath the channel's normally calm facade lies complexity. Tides shift, fog drifts in unexpectedly. The channel is shallow in places, deeper in others. And each crossing is a dance between navigational precision and nature's whims. It carries cruise liners like the Britannia and the newer St. Malo, as well as cargo vessels, naval ships, swimmers, migrants, historical war fleets, and Roman galleys. While many have crossed safely, some have vanished. Passengers and planes that never reach land, daring swimmers lost in calm waters, migrant boats disappearing in plain sight. And Paul, who disappeared amid a routine ride aboard a ferry packed with people. The channel is a conduit, not just of travel, but of secrets. Each wave and fog bank can hold a story. Now, let's dive into the story of Paul Carter. Before the headlines, before the haunting mystery of his disappearance, Paul Carter was simply Paul, a vibrant, fun-loving young man from the tight-knit neighborhood of Erdington, Birmingham, known as much for his quick wit as for his big heart. Born and raised in Erdington, Paul was the kind of person everyone seemed to know, or at least recognize, with his easy grin, dark hair, and the playful, mischievous spark in his eyes. He stood around 5'10", with a distinctive snake tattoo coiled along his right arm, a subtle hint of his bold, cheeky personality. Paul went to Hodge Hill Secondary School, where he made his mark not just with his academic work, but with his sense of humor and endless ability to make people laugh. Friends remember him as the Joker, someone who could lighten the mood of an entire room with a well-timed joke or playful prank. He was the one cracking jokes at the back of the class, always ready with a sarcastic comment, but equally ready to stand by a friend when they needed him. Beneath the playful, boisterous exterior was a young man deeply rooted in his family, fiercely loyal, endlessly loving, and proud of where he came from. His connection to his immediate family ran deep, woven into the fabric of his everyday life. At the center of that family was his mom, Teresa Humphreys, a midwife by profession, but more than that, a guiding force in Paul's life. Teresa wasn't just his mother. She was his confidant, his supporter, the one who always believed in him, no matter how rough the day might be. Their bond was the kind that only grows through years of unconditional love and trust. Paul's sister, Lindsay, shared that same closeness. They were typical siblings in many ways, teasing each other, sharing jokes, but always protective of one another. In private moments, they could still be found laughing at old inside jokes, slipping back into the rhythms of their childhood. But perhaps nowhere was Paul's heart more at home than in the garage beside his granddad, restoring classic cars. It wasn't just about the grease-stained hands or the hum of old engines. It was about legacy, about family tradition passed down from one generation to the next. Paul loved the feel of working on those timeless machines, the careful craftsmanship, the patience it took to bring a piece of history roaring back to life. His granddad didn't just teach him how to turn a wrench. He taught him to appreciate the beauty in the past, to respect the stories hidden beneath layers of rust and chrome. Outside the workshop, Paul's love for family only shined brighter. He adored entertaining with his aunties, the life of every family gathering, always ready with a joke, a story, or some harmless mischief. His role as the joker of the family wasn't just about making people laugh. It was his way of keeping everyone connected, of easing worries, of reminding those around him that no matter what life threw their way, there was always room for humor, always time to smile. His interests were broad and unexpected. Beyond mechanics and joking around, he had also visited St. Malo several times for work, boarding that same Brittany ferry previously. He was practical and reliable, a laborer on renovation projects, tasks he took on responsibly, methodically, and with a quiet pride. Paul Carter was, at his core, a young man full of life, fun-loving, loyal, endlessly devoted to his family. He wasn't someone who kept his emotions hidden. You knew where you stood with him. You felt his presence in a room, whether it was through his laughter, his teasing, or his steady, reliable support for the people he loved most. That's what made his disappearance all the more gut-wrenching, because the day he boarded that ferry to France, his family never imagined it would be the last time they saw him. The young man with grease under his fingernails, laughter in his voice, and endless plans for the future simply vanished, leaving behind an aching silence that his jokes could no longer fill. Now, to those who knew him, Paul isn't just a missing person case. He's a son, a brother, a grandson, the family's joker, their mechanic in training, their irreplaceable friend. And for them, until the full truth of what happened that night at sea comes to light, Paul Carter remains more than a memory. He remains a question that refuses to fade. On April 20th, 2007, 22-year-old Paul Carter stepped onto the sleek, salt-sprayed decks of the Brittany Ferries Britannia at Portsmouth International Ferry Terminal. It was a routine trip he'd made before, a weekend voyage to St. Malo to work alongside three close mates. But there was one slight difference in this trip. The night before he left, he told his mother he didn't want to go. Maybe he felt a premonition. Maybe he was just tired. Either way, she convinced him that he should go because he said he would work with his friends and he needed to keep his word. The terminal buzzed with evening energy. Families queued by the information desk, buses ferrying foot passengers to the ship, regulars grabbing pints at the nearby Ship and Castle pub just outside. The interior resembled a small regional airport, bright, airy, and bustling. Once aboard the Britannia, the transition was immediate. Polished reception halls, information kiosks, and crew ready at entries. Beneath its steel hull, the Britannia carried close to 2,000 passengers. Its public spaces felt more cruise ship than ferry. Air-conditioned cabins, reclining seat lounges, and live entertainment hubs. There was Les Abers, the panoramic a la carte restaurant, La Boule, a self-serve buffet, La Gerbe de Lochranan, the cozy cafe serving pastries and sandwiches, and the piano-backed Yacht Club and Gwenha Dubars, alive with live acts and laughter. On deck 9 and higher, the open sun decks offered calm respite, the perfect vantage for waves, foghorns, and the endless channel views. That night, Paul joined his friends in roaming the decks, trying cabins and reclining seats until around midnight, when he was seen stepping away from the lounge alone. The hum of engines, the echo of the hull, and the distant breeze were familiar comforts, interwoven with occasional laughter from fellow travelers. He may have paused at La Gerbe de Lochranan for tea, or peered through the foyer under Alexander Goody's Brenton murals, fading into the quiet corridors where passengers drifted into deep sleep. Crew patrols circulated with routine calm. No lights flashed in alarm, no voices raised, just the vessel's fluid heartbeat across the channel. At 7:15 a.m., the Britannia glided into St. Malo's harbor, sunrise painting the world pink. As his friends disembarked, they looked for him, called out his name. But they were met with silence. There was no sign of Paul on or off the boat. Crew statements confirmed no unusual events, no falls, no alarms, no disturbance recorded. It was as if Paul simply vanished into thin air. By the time Paul's mother got word, her world had shattered. She'd encouraged Paul to go on the trip, and when they spoke shortly before he left, his tone was quiet, as she remembered, almost reflective. Suddenly, The jokester's son, the devoted brother, the cherished grandson, was missing. Panic carried them to St. Malo, police stations, hospitals, ports, sitting through bureaucracy that kept passing responsibility between French and British forces. There were no answers and no urgency from authorities. The calm night offered no clues. Coast Guard said if he'd fallen overboard, they would have found him. There was no debris, no emergency stop, no CCTV capturing a stumble or a misstep. Paul's disappearance was total. His last clear imprint on the ferry's mid-deck corridors, seen by his friends just after midnight, before he vanished completely from the ship's narrative. What followed was an agonizing bureaucratic labyrinth. With Paul officially missing in French waters, Teresa was directed to the French police, who she says wouldn't talk to us initially. They were really not helpful. She and her husband spent two tense days, armed with an iPad and translated posters, pounding the cobbled streets of St. Malo, local hospitals, pubs, and police stations, hoping for a breakthrough. Meanwhile, West Midlands Police and Brittany Ferries each passed the case along, drawing sharp, frustrating lines between jurisdictions. Refusing to wait for progress, Teresa and her family launched their own campaign. Missing person posters appeared across French coastal hotspots. Notices were pinned to ferry terminals, inside clinics, at cafes, anywhere someone might recognize Paul. They reached out to the Coast Guard, the ferry company, even traced his drive from Birmingham, only to hit wall after wall. The family's searches became methodical and exhaustive. According to publicly shared investigation logs, they scoured car parks and clifftop vantage points, collected vehicle fingerprints and analyzed petrol tank records, consulted bunker blueprints and RAF maps, reconstructed Paul's likely routes using video and data, interviewed locals and media contacts, wrote to MPs, coordinated press features, and they have never stopped. French witness accounts trickled in. A woman said she saw him step off the boat in St. Malo, but it was claimed that police failed to follow up on that lead. Statements were taken in French, signed without full understanding. Investigations bypassed basic checks, no vehicle forensics, no in-depth interviews. Teresa and Lindsay refused to be satisfied with uncertainty. They were driven by the hope that Paul would return home. They continued their unwavering search, begging police to take a greater interest. Finally, in 2009, 2 years later, police said they would be taking a fresh look at the case. But just a few weeks later, the family was told the investigation had again been shelved because of lack of funding. Since then, they've had little contact from police. They appealed to French newspapers to cover the story, but they refused. According to West Midlands Police, Paul's disappearance is still being treated as unexplained, but said regular reviews are carried out. Paul has never accessed his bank account or made contact with his family. There hasn't been a single viable clue to Paul's whereabouts. And then, in 2020, a woman told Paul's family she believed he was living homeless in Slough, England. Teresa was shown a picture of a man who was allegedly going by the name of Paul, and she admitted there was a resemblance. But the trail went cold, with homeless shelters in the area unable to say if Paul had been there, and the COVID-19 pandemic slowing the search to a crawl. In early 2025, Teresa teamed up with the UK charity Missing People to relaunch the public appeal, coinciding with Paul's 40th birthday. Publicity officer Nadella Sanghor voiced that if anyone has any information, they can contact Missing People's helpline, saying, "Paul, if you're reading this, please get in touch." Despite frustration and dead ends, Teresa's resolve remains unwavering. She confesses the fear of missing a call from Paul keeps her from sleeping. But she stands firm, saying, "I can't give up on him. I truly believe he is alive. I think I would know if he wasn't." Now, all these years later, jurisdictions may change, forensic tools may improve, but Paul Carter's disappearance remains a mutely haunting puzzle. No CCTV footage showing him stepping off the vessel. No physical traces. No viable sightings they can follow up on. Just hundreds of posters, heartfelt pleas, and a single family refusing to give up. That night, aboard the Britannia, the line between the mundane and the mysterious was blurred. When Paul Carter vanished, what followed were whispered theories. Some hopeful, some chilling, some tinged with dread. At first, the simplest theory held up. Paul fell into the channel. But that seemingly straightforward possibility, it soon unraveled. Coast guards later stated that the waters were calm that night, and in such conditions, a body would likely have surfaced or washed ashore. With no debris, no alarm, no splash, the silence of that sea seems too profound, too intentional to be accidental. So another theory emerged, suicide. But skeptics, and especially Paul's family, rejected it outright. He was planning a renovation trip, helping friends in St. Malo and in high spirits. Records from police logs reveal the family felt the police prematurely embraced this theory, and the calm waters, again, would have betrayed such an act. Suicide suggested order and chaos, but the disappearance offered none. Some proposed a different scenario. Perhaps Paul left the ferry and walked away, disappearing into France. A French witness allegedly saw someone matching his description disembark. But that lead evaporated when police failed to follow up. Without CCTV footage, phone records, or bank activity tracing him, the idea remained airborne, neither supported nor ruled out. What about foul play? Could someone have taken him from the ship? Inside the ferry's corridors, quiet, dimly lit, patrolled only occasionally, an unknown presence could have lurked. Entertainment events, crew-only areas, open decks, ideal places for someone intent on staying unnoticed. While no direct evidence supports this theory, the absence of signs, no struggle, no note, no sudden emergency, leaves room for darker scenarios. Perhaps a targeted abduction or a chance encounter with someone with ill intentions. One cryptic online whisper speculated that Paul might have been experimenting with prescription or illicit substances that night. Whether he was slipping in and out of consciousness or stumbled into a dangerous mix of sea air and medication remains uncertain. That hypothesis raises questions, but lacks corroboration. Then there's the haunting possibility, a perfect slip of identity where Paul simply disappeared. No money spent, no calls made, no trace. Just a ghost amid passports and luggage. A final choice to vanish without signal. The family clings to hope that he is alive until proven otherwise, insisting no accidental fall or oversight explains his disappearance. For Teresa and Lindsay, every theory has been unacceptable. They reject suicide, refuse to accept accident, and cannot find comfort in disappearance without a trace. They probe deeper into ferry surveillance logs, were the cameras checked thoroughly? Crew and passenger statements, who else reported midnight sightings? Official duties, why weren't cabin records, security logs, or corridors swept more comprehensively? After all these years, the silence is the loudest thing of all. Each theory invites more questions. If he fell, why leave no ripple or splash? If he walked away, why no cry for help, phone call, or findable activity? If someone took him, why hasn't a single witness emerged to claim suspicion? Teresa's belief that Paul is still alive rests not on proof, but on disrupted reality, saying, "I would know if he wasn't." Could a mother's intuition be right? An accident buried by calm seas, a calculated escape into an anonymous world. A moment we'll never see, or a crime we haven't uncovered. Any of these could be the truth, or perhaps none. No footprints, no farewell, only a mother's conviction and a family's unyielding search, all centered on a single question still drifting with the tide. what became of Paul Carter? As we explore the facts and theories in this case, accident, foul play, voluntary disappearance, one unsettling reality lingers. How easily someone can vanish from even the most familiar spaces. Paul Carter wasn't hiking through a remote wilderness. He wasn't off-grid or unreachable. He was surrounded by people aboard a structured, secure vessel with staff, cameras, and protocols. And yet, he still disappeared. Stories like Paul's remind us how quickly comfort zones can shift, how travel, even routine journeys, carry hidden risks. That's why I want to share a few safety tips for anyone boarding a ferry, cruise, or any water transport. Awareness doesn't erase danger, but it can prepare us to face it. Hearing stories like this, it's easy to think, this couldn't happen to me. But the truth is, even in structured environments, people can still slip through the cracks. Paul vanished from a ferry packed with people, a ship designed with restaurants, entertainment, private cabins, security patrols, all the comforts of home. But he disappeared. And while this case remains unsolved, it reminds us how important it is to approach any sea voyage with caution and awareness. So whether you're taking a short ferry crossing, a weekend cruise, or a long-haul journey, here are the essential safety tips to protect yourself and your loved ones when traveling at sea. When you board a ferry or cruise, the first thing to do, even before grabbing a drink or finding your seat, is to familiarize yourself with the ship's layout. Locate exits, lifeboats, life jackets, and muster stations. Learn where the main decks are and how to reach them quickly. Find designated safe zones, lounges, staffed areas, well-lit corridors. Ships like the Britannia often span multiple decks, with cabins, stairwells, and secluded outdoor spaces. It's easy to get turned around, especially at night. The more familiar you are with your surroundings, the safer you are. Paul boarded with friends, but was last seen walking off alone around midnight. Now, it's crucial to stick with your group, especially late at night or on deck. If you plan to explore alone, tell someone where you're going and when you'll be back. Keep your phone charged and within reach. Agree on meeting points in case you get separated. Even on ships with security and cameras, isolated areas like decks, stairwells, exterior walkways can leave you vulnerable if no one knows where you are. The sea has a strange way of lulling us into a false sense of security. The fresh air, the horizon, the rhythmic motion, it's peaceful until it's not. Avoid standing too close to railings, especially in rough weather or after consuming alcohol. Pay attention to wet, slippery surfaces. If you're feeling disoriented, unwell, or intoxicated, stay inside communal areas. If you see someone leaning or acting unusual near railings, notify staff immediately. In Paul's case, no one witnessed a fall overboard, but the possibility remains. A reminder that open decks require caution, even when the sea seems calm. And just like any public space, ferries and cruises can attract a mix of people, most harmless, but some could have ill intent. Trust your instincts. If someone makes you uncomfortable, move to a populated area or alert the staff. Be cautious with strangers offering drinks or asking personal questions. Report suspicious behavior. And don't worry, staff are trained to intervene discreetly. On large ships, isolated spots like stairwells, empty lounges, or quiet decks can be exploited by predators. Staying visible and aware is your best defense. Now, it's easy to get comfortable on a ferry, especially overnight, but always keep personal belongings secure and close by. Carry identification, cabin keys, and emergency contacts. And as always when you travel, limit your valuables and only bring what you need. Now, if you're traveling solo, let someone know your route and arrival times. Always stay alert for warning signs that something might be wrong. If you're feeling unsteady or unwell, seek help immediately. You're lost. Don't wander unfamiliar parts of the ship alone. Doors marked crew only or poorly lit areas, avoid them. A little extra vigilance can prevent disorientation or worse. Remember, even experienced travelers can find themselves unexpectedly vulnerable. And what do you do if someone you're with goes missing, even for a short time? Don't wait. Notify ship staff immediately. Request a PA announcement if needed. Insist on checking cabins, common areas, CCTV footage, and ask for Coast Guard involvement right away. In missing person cases, the first few hours are critical. The longer you wait, the harder it is to retrace steps, especially once the ship docks and passengers disembark. Nepal's disappearance wasn't supposed to happen. His friends, his family, even the ferry company believed they were in a safe, structured space. But his story reminds us that safety is never guaranteed, and preparation is key. So whether you're traveling solo or with loved ones, on a ferry, cruise, or any sea voyage, stay aware, stay connected, trust your instincts. And most importantly, speak up early if something doesn't feel right. We can't rewrite what happened to Paul, but by sharing his story, maybe we can help someone else stay safe the next time they step aboard. On the night of April 20th, 2007, Paul boarded the Britannia ferry to Saint-Malo, France, wearing a white t-shirt and jeans. He's white, around 5 feet 10 inches, slim to medium build, with short dark hair in a neat short back and side style, brushed forward. But perhaps the most distinctive feature, the one you might remember even after all these years, is his tattoo. A snake coiled and etched along his right arm, and a scar on his forehead, faint but unmistakable. Paul's family has never stopped searching. And his story, the unanswered questions, the empty spaces, doesn't end here. But it could end with your help. If you've seen Paul, if you believe you've seen someone matching his description, or if you have any information, no matter how small, it could help. Please contact the Lucy Blackman Trust. From within the UK, call their free phone information line at 0800-098-8485. If you're overseas, dial +44 800-098-8485. Or if you prefer, email them directly at ops@lbtrust.org. Paul's loved ones have carried this search for nearly 2 decades. But hope doesn't expire. It only takes one tip, one sighting, one piece of forgotten information to change everything. Awareness, keeping Paul's name in the news, in social media, in podcasts like this one, remembering his name and his story, that's what keeps the hope for answers alive. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/The Last Trip Podcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.